Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
There's Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Happy holidays from us to them, and happy holidays from Sunbury Motors to all of you. Sunbury Motors Studio mobile today in Las Vegas, Nevada. Yesterday after the show, I did go to the Hoover Dam. And that is an absolute marvel. Wow. Kind of a blow-away experience. Not as great as having, you know, your fantasy team do really well, but still, I mean, you know, everybody has their own things in life. Tim Kimbrough is out of the tax slayer bowl, the linebacker for Georgia. Expect Natrez Patrick, the very talented freshman, to line up an inside linebacker with Jake Gainis, the transfer from UAB. I think it's Douglas is out of the game, too, the backup running back. Wrist injury. All right, let's bring it, before we get to Brandon Gowton, bleedinggreennation.com, time now for our play-by-play call of the day, Matt Pinto with the call.
Waiters near sideline, giving the ball. Here we go. Holds, looks, gets in Durant out front. KD, played by Mbamute, 8 seconds. Stutter steps right, pulls up, pops. Anger right, 18-foot, jumper drops! Thunder lead by one! Kevin Durant rises, rips the cords, 199 Thunder with 5.8 seconds left.
Now that's scoring. You're going to have 199 game tonight?
No. 60s maybe.
Are you going to get to 100 tonight?
I mean, Shikalimi is averaging about 61, 62 a game, and Seelens Grove's averaging about 50 to 60.
That's pretty good in 32 minutes. 32 minutes, that's good.
Yeah, they've been shooting the ball really well.
No, a 32-minute game, if you're doing that, you're averaging, if it's an NBA game, you're averaging 96 to 98 a game. That's pretty good.
About 47% from the floor.
That's really good. You're really good. Okay, let's bring in Brandon Gowton, bleedinggreennation.com. Brandon, welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Okay, big game Saturday night with the Redskins. Let's take it now from the Eagles' point of view. How do you assess the Sunday night game with Arizona where they lost 40-17?
Well, you just look at that Cardinals team, and they're really good. I mean, they've won a bunch of games in a row now.
Yeah.
They're 12-2. They're just a really, really good team. I mean, everything that they did, you know, the Eagles did the opposite. I mean, you look at they're just a good team. Like, they didn't turn the ball over. The Eagles did turn the ball over. The Cardinals only had one penalty. The Eagles had several penalties. You know, it's just really two different teams, and the Eagles are just clearly not on Arizona's level.
All right, now let's get to the Eagle defense for a moment. Early on, they really held this thing together, I thought. You can tell me if I'm wrong. What has happened, though, in recent weeks? Why have they given up a little bit more in recent weeks compared to earlier in the season? Have they been out in the field too long?
That's part of it. You know, I think playing so many snaps definitely hasn't helped. But you also look at the injuries. I mean, Benny Logan, starting nose tackle, he's kind of been dealing with a leg injury. And he, you know, for him being so good earlier in the season, hasn't done a whole lot lately. And he's such a key part to their run defense. You know, a run defense that was very good early on this season, allowing less than 100 yards, now suddenly allowing, I think, 60 more yards per game. So it's really crazy how the run defense has just gone from being such a big strength to just completely falling off the map in such a short amount of time.
Okay. Tyrann Mathieu got hurt in that game for Arizona, which I think going forward is one of the bigger injuries we've seen. Because I really feel he's a new era Troy Polamalu type of player. what is missing from Philadelphia? This has been let's redo the roster, let's change things over, let's build everything in Chip's image. So what to you is missing with this team?
Where to begin?
That's why we brought you on, and that's why we've got you on for 10 more minutes. You could take the entire 10 minutes if you want. I'll put my feet up and listen to this.
You know, it's really not one thing. I think that's the biggest concern for this team. I don't think you can say, oh, we'll fix this, and that's going to fix everything. I think there are a lot of issues. I mean, the secondary could stand to be better. You know, there are areas where you're locked into guys with money. I mean, you're locked into Byron Maxwell. The running back situation, obviously not great, but you're locked into DeMarco Murray. You know, the offensive line, that needs to be upgraded. You know, Sam Bradford, people want to say that he wasn't terrible in that Arizona game, but bottom line is he turned the ball over three times, and he did make some good throws. I think he was more up and down than just simply dad, but you know, probably not the best level of quarterback play you want. Not a guy who's still not your franchise answer. So, I mean, they're really just – and wide receivers, you know, I can rattle them off as I think of them here. I mean, you're not really set at too many positions on this roster.
Wow. What is not a good fit? And what Chip wants to do, is DeMarco Murray not a good fit? Is there a wide receiver that's not a good? Who's not a good fit in this offense for him?
I don't even know if it's about fit so much anymore. As this is about is you know overall talent. I mean, you can take guys who, you can talk about fit, but I just think you know some of these guys aren't going to be good in any scheme. When you look at a guy like first round pick Nelson Agholor and. He's playing over 70, around 70 snaps or so in a game, and he's only targeted once, and he has no catches. And then, you know, look back to last week, he had that good deep catch, but he still had a couple of drops. I mean, you're just getting nothing out of your first-round pick for the second year in a row. You know, the Eagles obviously taking Marcus Smith last year and him not really doing really anything. He had a half of a sack, his first career sack in the Cardinals game. Which tells you really all you need to know about the production they've gotten out of the draft and things like that.
Oh, boy. Now the matchup with the Redskins. Give me a couple of key swing matchups in this game against a Redskin team, which, to its credit, has really come together.
Yeah, the Washington's playing well, and the biggest concern for the Eagles, really, is the cornerback picture because Byron Maxwell has an upper body injury, shoulder, chest area. He said he's in a lot of pain, doesn't think he could play if the game was today. Seems like he might be out. Eric Rowe, the team's other starting cornerback, he has a concussion. He seems optimistic he'll be able to play, but really, you know, it's not up to him. He has to pass through the concussion protocol and be cleared before he can play. And the whole issue with those injuries, it's a short week. You know, the Eagles and Redskins play on Saturday, so there's not going to be as much time to recover, and that means the Eagles could have to have a Jalen Watkins or the likes of E.J. Biggers out on Deshaun Jackson, and that's obviously a huge mismatch in favor of Washington.
What about the matchup with Reed, the tight end? He's come on now, especially in the last 3 weeks. The last 3 weeks, he's become a more dependable, reliable target in this offense. So what about that matchup against usually a linebacker or somebody in the safety? What's the concern there?
Reed is definitely one of the bigger weapons Washington has, you know, especially in the red zone, really dangerous down there. I think the Eagles have struggled with him at times in the past, but more generally than not, I think the Eagles have done okay at covering the tight end. I don't think that's one of the biggest weaknesses in their defense. I think that's something they've been able to keep under control. You know, I think the Eagles will have special attention on him, especially when you're getting into the red zone, things like that. That's a part of the field where you know, you're not worrying about Deshaun Jackson as much. You're shifting your focus to a guy like Reed there. And I think the Eagles, they have enough, for as much as their linebackers have struggled here and there, they have some athletic guys who can cover. So I think that's a matchup they can keep in check.
All right, this is going to be a very tough question that I don't know if you have an answer to or even a guess. Maybe it's not a fair question. Okay, and seriously, in the Arizona game, did was there a feeling that they quit? And again, again, that might be a very unfair question.
No, I didn't get that sense, really. I think they were just outclassed completely. I think, you know, when we looked at those Buccaneers and Lions games in the middle of the season there, I think effort was clearly in question there. Obviously, because of those teams, you know, Lions and Buccaneers, really not great teams either. So to get blown out like that, you know, it's a different story. But with Arizona, I think everything was more about them just being really good and them being able to pretty much do whatever they want and just looking like a great team, while the Eagles were just clearly not on their level.
Sam Bradford, I know you touched on it a little bit. Obviously, Sanchez is not the answer. He's the consummate backup, and a long-term answer he isn't. What do you like about Sam Bradford, and what's still very concerning about Sam Bradford?
Well, you look at his performance against Arizona. I think you saw some of the accuracy. Some of his strength of being an accurate quarterback was there. I mean, there were times where he stood in the pocket. He took big hits. He got injured earlier in the game, had to miss a play, but came right back. I think, you know, you look at that. For as much as Sam Bradford gets hurt, which is a big problem, I think, you know, toughness isn't so much an issue. If he's, you know, trying to tough it out and get back in the game, I think that's a positive sign. But there isn't a whole lot to his game, you know, that seems exceptional. You know, I brought up accuracy, but then there were a couple of throws where he threw behind a guy and that pass was picked off. I think he might have done the same thing at another point. So even one of the best things, or one of the things he's supposed to be the best at, I mean, it's still not perfect. And you're just not seeing a lot of other skills there that make you go, you know, wow, like this is a thing you can point to, and this is why you want to build around this guy.
Right. Okay, and I can understand that completely. The offensive line has been an interesting mix all season long. Are they better, the same, or have they fallen back a bit?
I think they're inconsistent. I mean, you look at who you have there, and they've had guys up, they've had guys down. I think a number of the guys who are playing now are playing through significant injury. You know, you look at Jason Peters, he's toughing it out. Lane Johnson has a bunch of things going on with him. He's limping around all the time, but he's going to tough it out. I think these guys are, you know, look, you know, a lot of the players are like that in the NFL at this point in the season, but them especially, I feel like, have been not 100%, and it's hard. You know, they're like I said, they're inconsistent. Penalties have been an issue. You know, I think Jason Peters didn't really look so good against Arizona, which is, right, you know, a shame, because he's a Hall of Fame player, and to see him starting to decline, never a fun thing. So it's really just inconsistent, and it's a mix of, you know, guys just not being talented enough, too. I mean, you look at the guards, Matt Tobin and Alan Barber. You know, those are guys probably meant to be more backups than starters. So it's really a mix of just inconsistency and guys in and out of the lineup and injuries and guys who just need to be upgraded.
Well, this is for all of it, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the Eagles have no shot if they lose this game. So it's for all of it. If they don't win it, what kind of overhaul could there be?
No, that's a great question. I think even if they do win it, you know, even if they win this one, they win the NFC somehow, I still think, you know, this is a team that needs changes in the offseason, because there are fundamental issues with this team. I don't think Chip Kelly's going anywhere. You know, I think Jeffrey Lurie likes him too much. I think to give him all that power, as we've talked about before, and to get rid of him in one season later seems too drastic. It seems like not a move that Lurie would make, even if it might be the move he should make. It just doesn't seem like a realistic situation. So I think you're looking more at change along the lines of the coordinators. You know, maybe Bill Davis is gone, defensive coordinator. Maybe Pat Shurmur, offensive coordinator. Maybe he's gone. Maybe you're changing some of the position coaches there, trying to shake things up like that, probably trying to shake up the roster a little bit. I mean, you're not getting much production out of your wide receivers. You know, offensive line needs to be upgraded. So I think you're looking at, you know, there's areas where I think they definitely need to change and things like that. But at the same time, if you're bringing Chip back, you know, Chip might preach that, you know, we need more time together and we need continuity. And I don't think that necessarily is the best route to go.
Okay. Hey, Brandon, thanks so much. To you and your family, happy holidays, and thanks for all the great information. We look forward to the game on Sunday night.
Thank you. You too.
Actually, Saturday night, I should say. Saturday night on the 26th. I shall sit back and do nothing but watch the game. No work. No work on Saturday for this guy. No work on Friday. No work on Saturday. No work on Sunday. I'm going to take a 3-day weekend after taking the red eye back early tomorrow morning. That's when our flight is, 12:45 a.m. Christmas Eve. Hey, I love my job. It's all good. So I don't mind that. Kevin already has his gift for me, so he doesn't really care, you know, when I get back. We'll come back with more in a moment. You got your gift.
That's right. I'm good to go.
I bet you showed that gift off to the staff.
I have been running around most of the week, so I haven't had a chance. I've talked to a couple of people about it, though.
We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line a few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, and at SunburyMotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Welcome back to Las Vegas. Great to have you with us. I mentioned now, I told the story about going down to the Strip and being down there and then exiting the Strip about 25-30 minutes before the tragedy happened, in a spot that I had been standing in 25-30 minutes earlier, and then had worked my way back. And I told the entire story yesterday. And a 32-year-old woman was killed in all of that. And there's still three in the hospital with brain injuries. It's just horrific. And what happened? I have not been down. Obviously, we went and ate at the Wynn the other night. And the Wynn is just incredible. You go in there, and I challenge you to find a speck of dust, a scuff. The architecture is incredible. The artwork is tremendous. It is, I realize it's a casino, but it is an incredibly high-class operation at the Wynn. It's, if you're going to visit, there are a lot of great places to visit here. I would strongly recommend you take that place in. Now, yesterday, I had fun because we went to the Hoover Dam after the show. And what an incredible feat of work that is. The feat, it's unbelievable. Who conceives of that and then makes it happen? The number of people that died building it. Seeing huge electrical operations and towers at angles over the Colorado River. Stunning. It was also fun that, you know, there's always been a running joke that sometimes people think that Steve Jones is in two places at once because of the various things that I do. Well, yesterday I stood on the Hoover Dam, which, of course, is on the Nevada-Arizona border. And I stood with 1 foot in Nevada, my left foot, my right foot in Arizona, which also meant my left foot was in Pacific time, and my right foot was my left foot was in Pacific time, my right foot was in Mountain time.
See, now you're doing things that I would do, and if I were you, I'd be concerned about that.
No, I think that was I was in two places at once.
I would definitely do that.
My left foot was in Nevada, My left foot was in Nevada. My right foot was in Arizona. My left foot was in Pacific time. My right foot was in Mountain time.
See, I've always wanted to go to the four corners and just hop around there.
Oh, a lot of people do that. I mean, where they just try to, like, you know, get themselves in four states at once. Yeah. And that was just, that was fun. But I marvel at the foresight to come up with something like that, to build something that massive and off the charts. And then they also have now built a bridge that was just opened 5 years ago. That's a bypass bridge, because what was happening is that people would drive over the Hoover Dam and it'd slow down and look and take pictures. It was causing tremendous traffic backups. So they've closed the road about maybe a half mile into Arizona. And they now have a bypass where the highway just keeps going. And you can actually go up there and take pictures down from there, because they have it. They set it up where you can walk over it. Dick Girardi only went out a little bit and said, yo. Because that, if you've seen the Transamerica Tower in San Francisco, this bridge from its height to the bottom where the Colorado River is, the Transamerica Tower would fit underneath it.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors here with 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf, great to have you with us. From Las Vegas, home of the Kevin Herr Invitational.
I'd go see that.
They love you out here.
I'd invite myself to that.
Oh, no. I mean, look. They sit back and they say to themselves, you know what? We've taken so much of this dude's money over the years. We love him.
No, that was the horse racing track. That was not sports book.
No, that's okay. You ever play in a casino?
What kind? Table games and slot machines, yeah.
Did I confuse you with the question?
Well, I'm thinking sportsbook. No, I've never been at a place like that. I mean, I've played table games and slot machines in both Jersey and Pennsylvania and Delaware.
Okay. Well, you'd love it here. It was made for you.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
I thought... On Sunday night, I did not feel, I looked around, I thought maybe 5% of the tables were being used here. 5%. Last night, though, we went to the Hoover Dam yesterday, and it takes about 45 minutes to get out there. There's a lot of traffic, and maybe longer than that. I mean, it's taken, because of all the traffic getting out of Las Vegas yesterday and traffic getting back. So, I mean, it took a little while, and we spent some time there. And just had fun seeing something I'd never seen in my life, I know that. And then when we got back last night, I went to practice. Some things I had to take care of for the broadcast tonight. You know, I had to work on my charts. I got the pregame show done with Pat, things like that. So I went to see Spectre last night. And I was one of literally seven people in the theater. Seven. Seven people in the theater. Seven. And, by the way, the review, very quick. Top 10 Bond movie. Maybe not top 5, but top 10. Very, very good. But when I was done, I came down from the theater, because everything's self-contained in here. I came down downstairs from the theater, and I would say the casino was 80% filled. Because, I mean, everywhere I went... On Sunday night, the Wynn, Caesar's Palace, just doing a little tour. 5% to maybe 10% of tables or stations had people at it. 5 to 10%. Last night here, they're about 80% here. All right, time now for Sports Bozo of the Day. Odell Beckham for appealing. And then Josh Norman for his part in it. Ron Rivera, by the way, has banned his team from taking baseball bats onto the field.
That's a good idea. Who would have thought of that being a bad idea?
Sports Bozo of the Day.
I mean, really, okay, do they need a baseball bat on the field?
No, they don't.
I mean, that definitely deserves the horn.
Yeah, unreal. All right. The NFL, which spent, and I want to get into something about long-term building here in a moment with Penn State and football, basketball. Very quickly, though, the NFL, they've spent a lot of time criticizing researchers who warned about the dangers of football-related head trauma, backed out on one of the more ambitious studies yet on the relationship between football and brain disease, according to Outside the Lines, a 7-year, $16 million initiative. There's some reasons behind this. They're not really. One of the individuals is I believe Robert Stern from Boston University, who's done a lot of work on CTE. And what they don't like is he's made a couple of comments about Paul Tagliabue and Roger Goodell over time that I don't think lit them up, and that's why they did not want to get into it. And Chris Borland went to him. And so they backed out of it. The movie Concussion comes out Christmas Day, Friday. And the Boston University-led study involved 50 researchers at 17 institutions and hundreds of former NFL and college players. And they're going to participate as subjects. They want to detect, define, and measure the progression of CTE, which can only be diagnosed after death, and has been found in 87 former NFL players in the last 10 years. The NFL's $30 million grant, which is the largest single donation administered by the Foundation for NIH, and the NFL asked that they would fund that project, and they never received a commitment. And there's been no indication that the league is walking away from the original donation, but they're still waiting to hear word. Okay. Long-term building. I've talked about this before, long-term building, but I want to get a little more in-depth with this. Penn State football is on a break right now. They had their last practice last night. They will not practice again until Sunday night, the 27th. And then they'll depart for Jacksonville on the 28th. And then Penn State basketball is out here right now with Colorado. And Utah State just scored. It's now 10-6. They're going to kick the extra point. There are ways to quick fix, but if you're quick fixing, I think you're constantly quick fixing if you get into that pattern. You want to do something that is long-lasting and sustainable over a long period of time. It won't be perfect over a long period of time, but if you ever hit a bump in the road back is easier because you have been able to build something that is built to last. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care whether it's a radio station. I mean, look at Roger and what his family have done, how WKOK, through all the changes, has been built to last. I think that's a pretty fair business assessment. You know, take, for example, Santa Claus is on tonight. Is it, what, 80 years? Almost 80 years? 75 years of having that on, Kevin? 70 years?
Just about 80, actually. We think it's 80 years.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's what I said originally, 80 years. 80 years of something that's been part of the business formula that people have loved for 80 years. And what they've done, what the Haddon family has done, has been built to last. Oh, have there been bumps in the road? Of course there have been twists and turns, changes in the industry and so forth, but built to last. And they have not deviated from very far from any particular formula that they've had. It's the same thing in a sports team. You know, and that's why when we talked about doing this show, we wanted to do something that was built to last. I mean, when we sat down to talk about this, we didn't talk about, like, hey, let's just see how it goes. It was, hey, look, you know, we're going to make this work. You know, that's why we've been able to get the guests on that we get on the show and so forth. How you can get a Doc Emmerich to be on the show, a Tim Brando to be on the show, how, you know, James Franklin's come on the show. I mean, that's how you get that. You know, that's how it happens. You know, always getting Joe Susan on. Certain local things, you try to do something that's built to last. Same thing in sports. Now let's get to the sports part of it. Let's start with basketball quickly, then I'll go over to football. In basketball, Patrick Chambers, you know, we all know that, look, he didn't enter until June. Nobody enters a job in college sports in June, for goodness sakes. You've now lost an entire recruiting year and so forth. And you've got a roster that you inherit that doesn't quite play the way you think it ought to play and so forth. Okay. So you eventually get a little changeover in roster, but at the same time, you try not to panic. You don't load up the roster with junior college players. Because guess what happens if I go out and I get three junior college players? Guess what happens next, Kevin?
What happens next?
Instead of them being there maybe, instead of them being 4 years, they're done in 2 years and you're doing it all over again. Instead, he's gone the route where, take a guy like Peyton Banks, who's had 20 against Drexel the other night. He was redshirted. He's only a sophomore right now. He's got two more years left. Julian Moore. He's only a sophomore. They redshirted him. He's got two more years left. In their respective developments as basketball players, the extra year benefits them. Mike Watkins, for other reasons, is redshirting this year. And by the way, Mike Watkins did extremely well academically in the fall. Very well in the fall semester. And Mike will have 4 years of eligibility remaining starting next year, along with Lamar Stevens, Nazir Bostic, Joe Hampton, Tony Carr. So next year you got those five freshmen. Terrence Samuels, a transfer, will have 2 years left. Shep Garner will be a junior next year. Peyton Banks will be a junior. Julian Moore will be a junior. Through patience and not panicking, despite the urge to, you've now built a roster that allows the program to have sustainability and have a long-term feel to it. Now let's transition to James Franklin. The pressure, obviously, on him is great. And last year they played with, what, 41-42 scholarship players. This year was about 51-52, somewhere in that range. He had 77 players on the roster. Now, could he have tried to quick fix this when he got in here and said, okay, let's go with 10 junior college players? We got to somehow, you know, we got a product on there that's exciting, that wins. But what would have happened is that, say they put 10 JC players out there last year, as an example. Well, guess what would have happened at the end of this year, the second year? They all would have gone. Instead, what he did last year was that he redshirted 17 players. He wanted it to be 18, but Jason Kabinda then had to play after Naeem Wortman got hurt. This is a year ago when Naeem got hurt. Naeem eventually got back in the lineup, but Kabinda had to play. So he redshirts 17 guys who then get integrated into this year's lineup and helped out with the depth. And I remember Jack Hamm and I going to practice. The two areas that had the weakest depth on the football team the last 2-3 years have been offensive line and linebacker. Jack and I used to go to practice, and we'd look out at the linebackers, and the third group would come out. The third group. And I would look at Jack and say, what do you think of that? He said, Steve, that guy can play and that guy can play. He said, that's pretty good. He said, they're going to be, he said, a couple of years, they're going to be really good. That was the third group. The last 2 years, the two of us have gone out there, and we've always been very comfortable with the first group, but we've always been a bit uncomfortable with the second group. Not admiring the third group, uncomfortable with the second group because of the lack of depth. And that's what's happened with the program. Could you quick fix it and throw some guys out there that may or may not quite be ready yet? You could, but it would set the program back. He redshirted 17 guys. He did that again this year where he redshirted guys. Now, and he also wanted to redshirt, remember, Manny Bowen and Jay Cooper. He wanted to redshirt them. But when Naeem Wortman got hurt in the opener, when Brandon Bell got hurt in the opener, suddenly two guys are on the non-travel squad and were in the weight room, because it was non-travel guys are in the weight room on Friday. That's what they do, doing 400-pound squats and things like that. Suddenly, here it is the next day, they were forced to play. They didn't have anybody else. So they went from guys that they idealistically wanted to redshirt to suddenly playing. But everybody else they redshirted. You know, 15, 16 more guys redshirting, which include Ryan Buchholz, Cam Carter, Garrett Taylor, Nick Bowers, Irvin Charles, Juwan Johnson, Andre Robinson, guys like that. You know, some guys in the offensive line like Ryan Bates, Steven Gonzalez, and a guy who in the second half of the year really got a lot better, Sterling Jenkins at tackle. Those are among the guys that he redshirted instead of thrusting him in there because I've got to do something now, despite the temptation to do that. And that kind of patience and that kind of coaching discipline gives this program a long-term successful feel instead of that short-term gratification or growing pain that could have either set some players back or else partially set the program back and changed the clock on some guys. And Charles and Johnson, look, you've got Godwin, Blacknall, Hamilton, Lewis, Polk, Tompkins. Okay, you know, you can do that. Now, Johnson and Charles are going to make an impact next year. But he resisted that. And there's a wisdom to it that gives you that long-term successful feel instead of that short-term where maybe you picked up another win along the way that made everybody feel good. It's going to pay huge dividends in both programs because each coach decided that patience was intelligent versus I've got to do something now. If I don't, I'm going to start losing some people. The worst kind of management is one that panics. The worst decisions are made when you're panicking. Great management has a level head, sees the big picture, and sticks to the plan. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Robert Stein, the fine left-footed kicker for Akron. I always liked him. I always thought he was a good player. Closed out the half with a field goal, and Akron leads Utah State at the breakout in Boise 13-7.
Go Zips.
Bill Belichick, that's fine. Bill Belichick, not a big fan of some websites' analytics. And I can understand where he's coming from. I mean, he didn't rip them, but he says, you know, you're trying to match up information. I've talked many times about how I use analytics. I'll use analytics to give me an idea on something, but then I want to watch a tape to see, you know, what the reality happens to be. And I'll do that consistently, where I want to look and see, you know, why something is the way it is. You know, I'll look and see how many hurries an offensive lineman has given up. Why does he have bad footwork, or is the quarterback holding the ball too long that doesn't help him? You know, things like that. Well, you really want to take a look at the whole thing before you start making a blanket judgment using analytics. So I understand where he's coming from on this. I don't know if you use, for example, just in playing fantasy football, do you use analytics to try and pick guys for your, you know, for fantasy football? Or
no, I use magazines. But they use analytics.
Okay. All right, I understand that. And that's different because you're doing everything a stat-based thing anyway.
Exactly. I'm doing it strictly on stats, right.
Right. Yeah, you're doing stat-based, and I'm doing performance-based, where I'm looking at not just, for example, and I'll actually see what the grades are on guys, who grades in the red, who grades in the green. That, you know what I mean, Kev? That gives me a little performance faith. Like, if the guy's grading in the red, then there's something not quite right. The guy's grading in the green, you sit there and go, wow, okay. All right. So let's see why.
I look for now two things in fantasy, green and cheap.
Apparently, it's the same thing you use for gift giving.
You'd be surprised how well that works for gift giving.
You liked your gift, didn't you?
I did. I'm going to have to bring it out and play it for everyone. It'll be our call of the day maybe tomorrow.
Could be.